All right, here we are. Another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. What are we talking about this week?
Movies.
We're talking about movies. We're talking about The Martian, the outer space adventure with Matt Damon stuck on Mars. We're talking about some on-demand...
So if you're listening to this podcast, it may have started 7 days ago, have gone to the podcast and bounced back to you.
I have no idea what that meant, but I'm sure in your mind that's funny somehow. Justine doesn't know what that meant either.
Well, who's Justine?
Oh, well, I'm going to introduce... Let me tell you what we're going to do on the show before I introduce everyone. We're going to talk about some on-demand movies like Manhattan Romance, like The Connection, and Entourage the Movie is now on demand.
Vince got a movie.
And Spy came onto the man with Melissa McCarthy. We're going to talk about that. And Ala Mala, an interesting film from Mexico. That's what we're going to sit around talking about movies today. And joining me, as usual, we have Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
And we have Bill McCuddy. And
yes,
joining us this week is Justine Browning from We Got This Covered. Justine did, if you're joining us for the first time, as I say every week, this is sort of the after show to a TV show that we do called Talking Pictures on Demand, where we talk about new releases, but we also talk about the 300 movies that are on your cable box each week and sort through them and tell you what's worth watching and what's not. And what's your line, Bill? We watch... The bad movie.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have
to. That's absolutely what we do. So we're going to start with
This week we have some pretty good movies.
We do. Well, we're going to start with a movie that's not on demand, that hits theaters this week. Big budget movie by Ridley Scott, who knows a thing or two about making outer space movies, having done the original Alien, and science fiction, having directed Blade Runner, called The Martian. And I don't know. I've been talking enough. Who wants to just give a brief synopsis?
Well, how about The New Girl?
Justine. Tell everybody what the movie's about.
Well, Matt Damon is an astronaut left behind on Mars after...
By a woman.
That's
played
true.
By the commander, Jessica Chastain, and his entire crew. They abandon him because they think he's actually died. And they go back into space, and they're heading back towards Earth. And this story gains some traction, not only over at NASA, but globally. And it's basically them willing him in some capacity to come home.
Because he wakes up.
Together.
He wakes up on Mars, and we're all surprised.
Right. He's in like
Guess
some
what?
Kind
Matt
of...
Damon's not dead in the
not
first
dead.
5 minutes
right.
of a movie.
He's unconscious when they leave him on Mars and leave him for dead. And then, he wakes up, and he's like, he's a botanist.
He has to get very creative. He has to grow crops somehow on Mars. He's the greatest botanist on the planet, as he says.
Right. Well, Bill McCuddy has some interesting points in this movie, which I'm going to, before I chime in with my thoughts. So why don't you say
your
points?
Well, as I said at the top, the problem with the Martian movie is the time it takes to go from the screen to the audience back to the screen. This whole movie sets up this time delay. You know, it takes 9 months to get there. It takes 4 days to send a transmission of audio back. And it starts to screw with that logic a little later in the movie when it starts to get dramatic and there's a rescue. It also really insults the audience. Let me just stop and say, I like this movie. I'm going to recommend it. Matt Damon's great in it. However, it insults us by having a whole shipload of people who are big stars flying away from Mars for a long time when we know perfectly well they're going to turn that thing around.
Oh, I knew that 10 minutes in.
They're going to turn this bus around, and we're going to take this right back to the school. There's no vacation for you. I mean, it's an hour into this thing that could have – that 30 minutes of which could have been taken out. And finally, it does not need to be 3D. It does not require 3D.
I agree with you on
that. Well, I don't think – except for The Walk, which I just saw, and Avatar, which I saw a long time, there are very few movies that need to be 3D. To me, it gives me a headache and some kind of vertigo feeling after a while. But most movies are just converted to 3D. Like, I think The Martian is. Like, The Walk, if you see The Walk, that is really an unbelievable display of 3D. When he's walking on that wire and looks down, that should be in 3D. But so many of these movies, they're just converted to 3D, and it's a gimmick, so the movie theater and the studios can charge more money.
I'd be really surprised if Ridley Scott allowed a 2D movie to be bumped up to... I don't have the answer to this.
Well, it wasn't a good example of 3D. The only good example...
It wasn't a good use of 3D, is what
we
should say.
I mean, those panoramic vistas on Mars in 3D, that looked pretty good, but it didn't have to be in 3D. Again, unlike The Walk, where when Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the... what was the word? They didn't call him a tightrope walker. A walker?
He was an aerialist. Yeah.
Aerialist. And yeah, and he's looking down 110 stories. And I'm like, oh my God, on that IMAX screen. But yes, I agree with you. The Martian did. What do you think? Do you think The Martian needed to be in 3D, Bregoli?
No, not at all. The only film I can think of recently that needed to be in 3D is 300 Rise of an Empire, where Eva Green was topless for much of the movie. And if anyone was born to be topless in a movie in 3D, it was Eva Green.
Well, now, if we're going to make a gratuitous sexist comment, it's Jessica Chastain in this movie in 3D.
Because
she's It's gratuitous. They have her coming down the capsule in
funny, I did not notice that at all.
I didn't notice that really either. But here's my take on The Martian. It's a good movie, and I'll recommend it. And it's funny. I mean, it's Castaway in outer space is what it really is. So much so in the fact that there's one scene when, if you remember, first of all, instead of like Tom Hanks talking to Wilson the volleyball, it's Matt Damon talking to a video screen and making a video log diary, which is pretty amusing. I mean, you know.
For whom we're never told or for what reason we're never told.
But there are amusing parts like, I'm the greatest botanist in the world. Look at this. I grew potatoes.
I'm the best botanist on this planet. That was the joke.
Oh, that's the joke. Okay. So there's another scene where, you know, after he's on Mars for a long time, they go like 6 months later or something, just like the Tom Hanks 6 months later,
sure.
And he's lost like all this weight and he has the beard. So they kind of followed the Robinson Crusoe Castaway playbook to some extent. But that said, I like the movie, but it's way too long. It's a good movie that could have been a great movie if they cut a half an hour out of the movie. I will not tip off whether Matt Damon gets rescued or not, but I will say that an hour and 45 minutes into this movie, it was like whether you're going to rescue this guy or whether you're going to let the guy die on the planet, wrap it up one way or the other. I don't need for the eighth thing to go wrong, and like, all right, we're gonna swing around the planet by making a bomb out of like the elements that we have on the ship, and that's gonna slow the spacecraft down, and the crystals are gonna like heat up. It's like, okay, the first three or four times there was like some disaster that they had to overcome, all right, but like an hour and 45, it's like, rescue him, let him die. I'm done. I'm just done already. And it could have been, it just could have been a better movie.
It could have been a little bit shorter, I will say that, but I think the characters are so strong in this movie, and there was a lot of inventive casting. There were people I didn't necessarily picture for certain roles, and then they just proved that they were actually perfectly chosen for those roles.
Kristen yeah, Jessica Wiig. Chastain is a good example of somebody
Absolutely.
Who wouldn't have thought of leading the. And I think she's really well cast. I think. Although he's. The problem I have with this movie is everybody on the ground is dumb and everybody up in space, which is just Matt Damon.
Elaborate on that. You mentioned that on the TV show.
Because it's written as the star vehicle for Matt Damon, the protagonist has to make all of the interesting or intelligent choices. And NASA is forced to having Jeff Daniels as this evil head of it or like sort of.
I don't know if he's evil. I think he's kind of like ambiguous whether he's
bureaucratic.
Yeah, he was bureaucratic. He should have been a senator instead of the head of NASA. The head of NASA would really want to get this guy back. But the point is that everything that happens in the movie, Matt Damon initiates, not NASA. Think about Apollo 13, where it was smart people on the ground and smart people up in the capsule, and they figured out a way together to make this
work.
Well,
that's true.
That's not happening in this movie except for one thing, which is a nerdy guy who is a computer expert says, what if we, and then he comes up with how they should rescue
well,
the
That's it. 13.
Everything else is Matt Damon's idea to grow stuff, to go get power, to find. It's ridiculous when Matt Damon gets in a lunar module and starts to drive someplace and everybody goes, where is he going? And Chidwell goes, I think I know where he's going. Well, yeah, I think we all know where he's going.
Apollo,
there's only one other place on that planet where there's power and that's where he's going. And they figure that out after the fact?
Apollo 13 is a true story, or it's based on a true story, and what happened in Apollo 13...
This isn't real, The Martian?
Is once that spacecraft got hit, and these guys could have, you know, died in space, right, they weren't making any of the decisions, those three astronauts, which really happened in real life. It's the NASA team figured it out and goes, okay, you're getting poisonous air coming into the capsule.
Right.
Let's build a filter.
Yeah.
You've got a cardboard box. Look
right.
under your seat.
It was MacGyver.
Like Jim.
But the people up in the capsule were smart, too.
Right.
I mean, they were building what they were told.
But that didn't bother me. I mean, I was entertained by the ride.
I liked
the humor. I agree, completely.
He makes mistakes in the movie. You see that he gets comedically... very cocky and then is pulled back down. He does make a lot of errors, and they are solved by the people on the ground that eventually have to facilitate this
potential
rescue.
What do you think, Bregoglio, the thing?
Well, I got a lot of opinions, but there are four of us making opinions. I'm actually going to contribute something different. I have sound from these guys.
Oh, yeah, let's hear from
Yeah, right, you caught up with these
Matt
people,
Damon.
Right?
And
so what did Damon have to say?
Well, Damon, for one thing, was actually glad that he wasn't the only person in the movie. He was worried that audiences would kind of tune out of him after a while.
There was a really wonderful script there, and it cuts, the story cut back a lot to all these great actors doing really exciting things. So the fact that I didn't feel like I was going to bore anybody to tears, because if I started to do that, we could always cut back to the other story going on. So so I had that going for me.
You also caught up with, who else did you catch up
well,
with?
Well, Jessica Chastain mentioned that the weightless sequences that Bill McCuddy referred to were actually one of the reasons she wanted to do the movie in the first place.
It's part of the reason after working with Ridley Scott, it was the second best part of the reason of making the film is the zero gravity stuff I was really looking forward to. And when I got on set, I realized how many people are involved in that, because there's all these people in the pulley system that are controlling your movements that you have to then make look like you're doing it. And it's choreographed within an inch of its life, and we're just kind of along for the ride learning it, and I had so much fun.
And finally, I've got Ridley Scott, who has done space fantasy movies before, like Alien and
Blade Runner.
Prometheus. Yeah. And he said that the fact that this is more science-based, that made it actually easier to do.
And this is a lot easier because actually you can lean very heavily on the science in the book, the performance of the way the characters are, the way the NASA people are, the way the JPL people are. So to me, this was a much more realistic movie.
You know, it's interesting that he said that, because I think scientists are going to be all over this movie. I think it's, as I said, it kind of screws with the time. I think it screws definitely with the time. They're going to talk about, I mean, it's sort of fortuitous this week that they found running water on Mars. That's been a great sort of boost for the movie.
Timed with the marketing.
Yeah.
It's all
Ridley,
a conspiracy.
Ridley has been talking about that on a couple of morning shows this week.
Damon only knew that there was water on Mars, just think how much easier that time is.
He had to make water, and that was a pretty cool sequence. Listen, I like this movie. I just think it's got some holes.
I like it, too. I'd recommend it. So Bregoglio, you recommend it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Recommend it. Any problems with it for you?
No. I had a laugh a few times at all the duct tape he was using.
Yeah, they're in Mars. Well, there's a spacecraft convertible sequence that I kind of like. They won't tip that off with a tarp. If you see that, I thought that was kind
the
of...
The sequence leading up to them planning that I thought was very funny. This is a lighthearted movie.
Let me just have the last word and say, if you get to the theater and 3D is sold out and it's also available not in 3D, by all means, still see the movie.
Yeah, a lot of fun for a while, and I'd say worth seeing. All right, moving on. So if you watch the show, like I said, we do a lot of on-demand movies, and there's a new movie that's out this week on demand called Manhattan Romance, which I actually really liked. It's written, directed, and stars this guy, Joe O'Brien, who I was not familiar with at all.
Tom O'Brien.
See, that's how unfamiliar I was with this guy, that I can't even get his
name
right.
He calls
Joe
you Nate
Tom.
Rosen, so it's okay.
And you are familiar with Tom O'Brien's
I did.
Work.
I saw Fairhaven at the Tribeca Film Festival a few years ago, and it really stuck with me. I don't think anyone else has actually seen it, but I think he has a skill for capturing these mundane, very relatable situations, but in a way that's unique and interesting. He gets really intimate and genuine performances out of his actors. I can tell just by the first two films.
One is about
I like the way Justine gave a little synopsis of the Martian. So and since she gave the synopsis on the TV show, or as I call them, the lead, tell everybody what Manhattan Romance is about, Justine.
Tom O'Brien, who wrote and directed the film, stars as a documentary filmmaker, and he's completing a project that is examining relationships, and at the same time, he's actually confronting the fact that he's fallen in love with his best friend, who's played by Catherine Waterston. And one of the issues there is that she's actually in a relationship with a woman who's played by Gabby Hoffman. And again, I think it's a really interesting take on the romantic comedy.
Before we talk about this movie, is it just me, or does Gabby Hoffman's overly large eyebrows, I know this is shallow, bother anybody?
We've talked boobs, now eyebrows.
These eyebrows.
What are we talking about next?
George Whipple.
We're a lowbrow show.
George Whipple, who's on New York One, his whole gimmick is his eyebrows. And I don't know, I guess I'm used to that, but her eyebrows, it's just all I see are these eyebrows.
She's rebelling a little bit against the conventional, you know, sense of beauty on screen. She plays a lot of these offbeat women who don't like to conform.
I like her. I think she's a good actress, but I'm just saying these eyebrows just distract me.
I honestly say I've never noticed. She's not Groucho Marx to me. I mean, it's like... I'll tell you who was distracting in the movie.
She's a good actress.
Caitlin Fitzgerald as this kind of new age girl who is this giant tease who keeps saying, let's hold off on this. Why don't we just hug? Everybody hugs
in
this
movie.
She's great. She's worth it. But I have to say, on the whole, not in love with this film.
Here's why I like the film. First of all,
some real, some not real.
It's a Woody Allen kind of homage to Woody Allen. And that's okay. I mean, if you're going to steal from somebody, I say steal from one of the best. But, you know, what this guy does, Tom O'Brien does, I got to check his first name, right? Not Joe O'Brien, Tom O'Brien, is there's all these hip references that Woody's kind of out of touch with that he can't do. So in a way, it's a little like a Woody Allen film where the sensibility is more, millennial. What I liked is you know, this character that he plays, that Tom O'Brien plays. Yeah, he's with this Caitlin, who's great. Caitlin Fitzgerald. Yeah, she just let me. Everybody wants to hug her to get her energy, and it's this whole parody of this new age stuff, which is there's this one scene she wants to have this open relationship, and which he's not really okay with, and she's with another guy who has his shirt off, and he's like, oh, it's like this hippy dippy nonsense.
Like, join us.
Join us. Come in, man. It's all in your head. It's like we want you to join us, and it's just I think it's very very funny.
I think Ed Burns does this better, has been doing it longer, and
certainly
discovered
Caitlin
Fitzgerald. She was in one of her first movies was his. Yeah. I just think this guy needs a little more polish.
I think that he shows a lot of promise.
You know what
Why am I paying for on-the-job training?
Well, you know what I always say, Bill? I say perfect for on-demand. Worth full price with a date at the box office for $30? I don't think so.
If it happens to be on
$4.99 on demand or whatever, I think it's a perfect on-demand movie. I think it's a nice romantic comedy. It's a good date movie to sit down like, let's watch this. And I think that she is Sam Waterston's kid.
Yes, she is. She's going to be in Jobs, actually. She was in Inherent Vice and a movie a few years ago called The Babysitter.
Catherine Waterston.
Yeah,
really a good job, very appealing. Look, is it a great movie? No, but I think, again, you want to sit around and watch a smart, cute rom-com set in New York. I still want – they go to this place called Atlas. I want to know where that is.
I don't know where that is.
I think it looks East Village-y.
It definitely had that little hipster vibe.
I like the movie.
The whole thing was shot in Wisconsin, remarkably. No.
All right. So here's a movie that McCuddy recommended on the show this week, The Connection. Why don't you tell the audience, our listeners – why you picked this movie?
I thought it sort of slipped under the radar. It came out in the summer and didn't get enough of a push, I didn't think. This is the French side of the French Connection story. So we have a guy played by Jean Dujardin in talking about...
The Oscar winner for The Artist, in case...
Yeah, the biggest marketing mishap in the right after... right after... what's the horrible one that won a few years
Crash
ago?
Crash won Best Picture?
Mountain. Yeah, the worst thing since Crash, I think, was just well-marketed. We can talk about that on another show, but he was The Artist, and the silent film that won a couple of years back, and he won Best Picture.
It was Hollywood celebrating Hollywood.
It was Hollywood celebrating a guy named Harvey Weinstein. But here's the... point. He's much better in this. He talks in this one. This one's a talkie, and he actually gets to have dialogue. And he's a French magistrate who's trying to stop the French Connection in Marseille. And I think it's got great action. It runs a little over 2 hours, so it's longer than most movies that are out these days. And it's got some great sequences in it, some action sequences, and he's just really good in it.
You go ahead, Justine.
Yeah, I think that is what really makes this movie. He's charismatic. He's an old-fashioned movie star in a lot of ways. And he really should be in more American films. And I hear that he's still struggling with English a little bit. I know he was in Wolf of Wall Street. He was a real standout in that.
Yeah, it was great to see him in his native tongue, because he's always struggling with the language, although in The Artist he didn't speak. But when you see him in American movies, you know that's not... right. Here he is in his native language. And so getting the accent right or something is not a distraction. And I like the film, and I think they really captured the 70s. There's a shot in this movie which is really cool, where they're on the Jersey side and they have the Twin Towers, and they're building the Twin Towers. You could see them kind of, I don't know how they incorporated,
visuals are so striking.
That was very cool.
That was one of the other strong scenes.
Very cool.
Its look and the staging of certain scenes, and there's these great montages. They communicate so much in this film without dialogue.
If you're one of the people who did not see the Melissa McCarthy movie Spy when it was in movie theaters, I am giving you, or we are giving you, a gift. See this movie. Mm-hmm. McCuddy recommended this movie to me, like when it came out in theaters, and I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it on demand. they sent me a link to watch it. I saw it, a couple of days ago, and I couldn't stop laughing. I watched this with my wife. We couldn't stop laughing from start. Everything works in this movie.
Consistently funny throughout.
It's great. First of all, you get two different. It's like a James Bond parody, and they've done James Bond parodies
right from the opening credits. It's great.
Yeah, the credits are like Goldfinger.
The theme song.
Yeah, the song is like Donna, Donna. It's just like James Bond, and you're smiling, Bregoli.
Yeah, they throw on a lot of weird stuff too. A lot of weird businessy things, like the vermin in the ceiling of the CIA.
Bats.
Yeah, side jokes. A lot of side jokes that were, but they all land. It would be really interesting to watch this movie again and count the number of jokes that don't work, because it's like a handful. There's like 1,000 gags.
Jason Statham.
$9.95.
Well, first let me tell you what it's about. If you haven't seen the movie, Melissa McCarthy is an agent for the CIA, but she's got a desk job, and she's kind of like Chloe, if you know the TV show 24, talking in Jude Law's ear, who's like 007, and which is kind of another interesting thing, because I think Jude Law was considered to be
Jude. He was on the list.
He was on the list to be considered for James Bond at one particular point. So you get to see
Sean Connery told me that would be his pick, actually.
Mm. So you get to see Jude Law as kind of a James Bond character, and Melissa McCarthy's going, there's three guys around the bend in the closet. They have guns. You know, she's kind of like telling, but she's got this desk job. And through a series of circumstances, they put her out in the field, and they give her the lamest disguises. She's always like these aliases. She's like a housewife with
these,
like...
A woman with
like,
five cats.
I like her. Well, Jason Statham refers to her as lunch lady.
Lunch lady,
yeah. And then she's like, we got a new alias. She's are you kidding
me? Every line of hers is, oh, come on. Like, she wants to be the sexy spy.
And they give her an orphan nanny wig with, like, big glasses, and it's just... But Jason...
She gets off the plane in Italy and gets out, and there's these guys who are like every other woman, and they're in a Ferrari, and they get to her, and they just like tumbleweed, nothing. And then you go to the next girl, and they're like,
but how great is Jason Statham? He's parodying those tough guy roles that he's done in movies. And the running gag there is that he's like, I survived 120 different poisons.
Yeah.
You know,
saying things that sound absolutely absurd. Yeah, that he was part of an underground club where rich people would pay to watch them all eat poisons and see who would live.
Right, and most of that didn't happen. That never happened.
Like, that doesn't sound
awful. My arm got ripped off and I sewed it back on with my other arm. I mean,
she's
it's
like I don't think that's possible.
Over the top gag.
It's great.
The English actress. Who's the English actress?
Rose Byrne?
No, the other one.
The guy who's Aldo, the one who's lusting after Melissa McCarthy? Right.
Oh, actor. I thought you said English actress. Sorry.
Actress. No, I mean the one who is Melissa McCarthy's character's best friend. From The Office.
Oh, yes.
That role was actually written for her.
Not Emily Blunt, but like...
I know who you're talking about. She's very good.
I'll look up her name.
Jump in.
We don't know her name.
She was wonderful. I mean, the relationship.
This is unrehearsed, and we prove it every week.
That's true.
The relationship between the two of them, I think, is so... By the end of the film, I've talked about this with a few people. I don't know. I was in tears by the way that their friendship developed and survived this.
She's a Mike Lee actress, I think. She's been in some Mike Lee movies.
All right.
We got to talk about Entourage and.
But I think with this film, there's such a powerful cultural commentary. In addition to the fact that it is so hilarious, I think it is about judging someone too quickly and not knowing what they're capable of.
And speaking of judging people too quickly,
I got the actress's name since everybody was driving me crazy.
You have it in about 10 minutes.
Her name is Miranda Hart.
There you go.
So now that and a couple of bucks and a Metro card will get you on the subway.
Melissa McCarthy's back. That's the important thing. She made some duds like Identity Thief, but that was a huge movie. Yeah, they make
Tammy
money. Doesn't
the
make
one
them good.
Flops
this one deserves
critically.
To be good.
You
and
get
make
two
money.
Melissa McCarthy's here. You get the Melissa McCarthy, who's this nerdy, goody-two-shoes, inhibited woman for most of the movie, and then she kind of becomes the foul-mouthed, kick-ass woman at one point. And when she trades barbs with Rose Byrne, these insults, it's like Don Rickles meets, Jeffrey Ross or something like that, just trading like roast. It's great. I cannot speak more highly of this movie. Here's another movie that's out. Entourage, the movie version of the hit HBO series Entourage, has come to demand and on
DVD. You keep saying it like it's a product that goes on toast.
Well, they marketed it like a product.
Like
it was
trying.
Look,
I'm having that Entourage. It's Entourage.
Entourage.
Yeah,
I like Entourage. I was a big fan of the television show when it was on HBO. And what I really like about the film is that Doug Ellen, who is the creator of the series, did not make a movie. I hate when they make movies out of television shows, if you're a fan of the show, that explain everything to somebody who's not familiar with the television show. If you do not know the show, and if you do not like the show or have not watched, don't go to the movie. Mm-hmm. This is like a two-hour episode, a continuation of where Entourage left off, and it's totally for fans. And is it a great episode of Entourage? No. Is it a terrible episode of Entourage? No. But it's a good episode of Entourage, and I was happy to catch up with the characters again and see what Ari and E and Turtle and Vince and Johnny Drama were doing. And Ari, yes, not as funny as he is in the series, but still funny with some like put down lines, and I liked it. And Justine is on the TV show today was like
the women were well written, didn't you think?
Yeah, had issues. Tell me your issues with
the. Well, it feels so dated because, of course, this show is known for being homophobic, very whitewashed, sexist, and now there's so much more of a dialogue about that. And so when this film came out, I think the chief criticism was the fact that women were represented as basically mannequins and naked sex props or shrews or nags. There are no dynamic.
But you had no problem with that?
And I loved it all the way through. No, but it's not even that. I mean, it's just not well written. It seems like a rushed script, which is odd because it was years in the making. And again, all of these cameos that are loaded into the movie, some of them are B-listers anyway.
Well, no, the cameos, everybody that ever had a guest shot or was on Entourage, the TV show, which is great if you like the show, shows up in the movie. There's John Stamos. Isn't John Stamos crap? Not John Stamos.
If you've just joined us, Neil is closed captioning for The Comedy Impaired.
Bob Saget. I got confused with my Full House. With my Full House cast members. Bob Saget shows up.
It couldn't save this movie. I mean, again, there were scenes that did not land that feel like they were half written.
The Mark Wahlberg cameo was funny.
There's a lot of funny
cameos. In the editing room when they're having
trouble. Brigoli, what do you think? Were you a fan of the TV show?
No, I wasn't, actually. And I don't like so many self-absorbed characters in one movie. Just trying to drive me a little crazy. It was kind of like being with a bunch of journalists, frankly.
I was just going to say, how do you do this show?
Yeah.
Who live in much nicer houses and drive nicer cars.
Haley Joel Osment was interesting.
Yes, that is true.
That was an interesting role in the heat.
That is true.
He's grown up interestingly.
Yeah, he has.
I found these characters likable. I didn't want to catch up with them. Like, leave them back.
Did we also
at HBO?
Did you see The Walk, Brigoli?
No, not yet.
Okay, but we saw it. Justine, what do you think of The Walk?
It's
playing at the New York Film Festival,
yeah,
by the way, which
the
is
New
currently
York Film
going
Festival.
On right now.
I expected something very different. So the first surprise for me, and obviously not to give too much away, is that there is a narration throughout. And the documentary interviews Philippe Petit the whole film. And so we already have that narrative and that first-person account. And so I feel like they could have showed us more than have just his perspective.
So if you don't know what The Walk is, it's about the guy, the French guy in 1974
Philippe
who
Petit.
Put up a wire between the two trade towers in New York and walked across them. I agree completely with you that the documentary
Man
was
on
much
wire.
Better.
The documentary is Man on Wire. It was better. It uses real footage.
Oscar
but
winner.
But I will say that footage at the end, which is in 3D, when he actually walks across it, is breathtaking. I mean, there's a thing, you know, there's an argument that movie theaters are going away and that, you know, but here's the thing that seeing an IMAX in 3D, when he does that walk,
absolutely
is like,
it.
And he's looking down and you see that World Trade Center Plaza 110 stories below and you see the city skyline. I'm like, Bill and I were sitting together last night watching this going like, I don't know how many times him and
hold
I
hold my hand, just, I'm scared.
Just went like, wow, that's
yeah,
like
yeah,
stop
it, Neil. You definitely haven't seen anything like it. And
needed to be 3D as opposed to Martian,
absolutely.
Which we talked about a little earlier,
and
not
needing
to be.
It stays with you. I mean, that image of him looking down from the towers, you know, from that perspective, it stays with you. This movie really stayed with me. I actually saw it a few days ago, so it's still, I'm still thinking about it. Again, I didn't expect it to have this kind of whimsical, childlike feel. I thought it, I mean, the last Zemeckis film, this is directed by Robert Zemeckis, the last Zemeckis film I saw was Flight, and that's obviously a lot more, you know, a lot darker, a lot grittier, and so I didn't
which
expect.
Also takes
yeah,
place.
This is so lightweight, it's yeah. especially
PG.
For first hour. It
did
feels
you
like something.
Gordon-Levitt?
I think he's fine. He's doing a bad French accent. I mean, it's a, sort of a thankless
which is weird
job
because he speaks
ben,
French.
Ben Kingsley doing an even worse one.
No, he was Czech.
He was in the movie for like 10 minutes.
Ben Kingsley was Czech. A lot of people keep complaining about his French accent. He was playing a Czech character, and he does a great Czech accent.
Okay, well, Czech, please. I'm out of here with him.
That's funny.
Yeah, look, it doesn't need to be anything except the 40 minutes. So the problem for me is that all the setup is much better in the documentary
yeah.
because
plus they cut out a lot of stuff. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
They cut out
because they have him walking across Notre Dame in the movie, but in the documentary he did lots of walks. As you
right.
said, Justine, make
yeah.
that point you
we
made
don't
about
see
like
a buildup. I mean, usually yeah. there is that kind of buildup where you see them stumble and then they work their way up to bigger and bigger things and. Kind of, we see him stumble a lot and fail at wire walking, and then
from
all of a sudden,
feet in the air.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And then all of a sudden he's
right.
walking.
He goes from
Notre
like
Dame.
A like a introductory college class in tightrope walking.
Which
so
we
like,
know
I'm
from
walking
the documentary isn't true. I mean, there was a process where he got better at it. The other frustrating thing, if I'm recalling the documentary correctly, is it was kind of breezy that day. And he was getting blown around a little up there. Not in this movie. Not at all. At the very end when he gets off the wire, he's got a shaky moment that, again, I think is manufactured for the movie and didn't really happen.
To me,
so,
it's about the visual spectacle about him walking
awesome
on the wire.
The end.
So you should look at the documentary.
Stay for the end.
And
don't
then,
leave.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Both. But, watch
but,
the
you
last
know,
40 minutes of the movie.
You know,
and
we talk about on demand all the time. And we're talking about, like, I think if you're going to see The Walk, you should see it in 3D and IMAX.
Again, there's nothing
but
like it.
I was playing this game. It wasn't even a game. It was a discussion I was having with my wife the other day, and it was like, in my neighborhood in Manhattan, just 15 years ago, there were 15 movie theaters in a 14-block radius, and now there are two. So, you know, yeah, there's been these creation of these huge multiplex 15-screen theaters, but, I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, look, with streaming now, I mean, people have been moaning this for years. I mean, when television first came on the scene in 1948, they go, that's the end of movie theaters. And if you watch The Last Picture Show, yes, a lot of movie theaters did go away and drive-in movie theaters went away, but movie theaters still survived. And then they came out with color television and they said, okay, well, that's the end of movie theaters, and movie theaters survived. And then the HBO, I remember Marquise, I'm old enough, stopped pay TV. And they go, well, now you're going to have the big no commercials with these movies a few months after the theaters on HBO. That's the end of movie theaters. Again, movie theaters don't go away. But now you have flat screen TVs that are huge, that are in your house, and you have Netflix and you have on demand where the movies are sometimes come out simultaneously.
Yeah.
There's an article that says that I had everybody read about how Netflix, somebody was bemoaning the fact that Netflix is going to destroy the movie business. So what do you think is going to happen?
Movie theaters are going away.
Do you really think so?
I think that really what the difference between all of those periods of time that you just mentioned is that we weren't in this fantastic.
Oh, and the VCR. There's another one. That's going to ruin the movie.
But we are in an age where there has never been more TV to watch, more TV shows. It's unbelievable, the different platforms. And there are incredible shows, incredible actors on incredible shows. And I think that is really contributing. And not only that, just the unbelievable cost. It is unbelievably expensive, and so people don't necessarily go to the movies unless it's something that they really need to see on the big screen,
you
like
know,
The Walk.
When Andy Samberg hosted the Emmy Awards, and he did a skit, which I think was a kind of like a tribute, a little parody of that Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
He was in a
shelter.
Bunker. Yeah, and he had to watch all these shows. And then he comes out of this bunker and he starts rattling off like 50 shows.
So
and I'm like, I can't believe how many shows there are on television. I mean, so yeah, it's a very good point, Justine. Is there so much, and so much of TV is better than movies. I mean, you know, you could look
all
at some of these series.
Great directors. For instance, Cary Fukunawa, right, who did Jane Eyre, he did Sin Nombre, he ended up, you know, being behind True Detective, and he's gotten a lot of notoriety. And Rian Johnson, who did Looper and Brick, he ended up directing a lot of episodes of Breaking Bad, and he's gotten more acclaim than he did for.
And if you watch some of these cable shows, you know, you'll see like True Blood or Breaking Bad or Walking Dead. All of a sudden, you see directed by, and you go, "Oh my God!" Mm-hmm. Like I know this director,
Gavin O'Connor.
John Dahl, really? It's like I know.
But now the problem for television is, as my 15-year-old daughter said the other day when I asked her if she'd seen a show, she goes, "Dad, I don't watch television."
Well, that's
watches
it.
Watches everything. Everything on our laptop.
I have 20-something neighbors who don't own a television. They watch everything.
They should be arrested.
Well, that's the thing is that my daughter, who's 21, and her friends, they know the shows, but they don't watch it on a television. Mm-mm. They're watching it on, you know, Hulu Plus or Amazon or Netflix, and you know they're get or any other means.
And we're not putting that down since you're probably listening to this podcast on a computer.
Yeah, but
please
but,
continue.
But the way of watching television, which is more my, you know, like, oh, you know, what's on TV tonight? Or, you know, yeah, that's going away.
There's so many movies that are available illegally the week they're released as well online. Let's not forget
and
that.
And your daughter, who's 14 or 15, Bill?
15.
15. Okay, I don't know if she's anything like my daughter, but they're watching movies. It's amazing when you look at a Robert Zemeckis film and, like, you see it on a big screen. My daughter's perfectly happy to watch a movie, like, on her phone or a computer. I don't know if your daughter is like that.
Yes,
also.
And also, I think that, you know, filmmakers said film was never going to go away, which, by the way, The Connection, which we recommended earlier, was shot in 35 millimeter. I meant to mention that. It's one of the last movies that has been done that way. Everything's getting shot in video, and all the filmmakers said, no, they would never give that up. They always wanted film, and now they're using digital. I think they're going to get okay with the platform being diminished in size from the big screen. It's going to take a while, but when they realize audiences are coming to see their films either on demand or on a computer, they're not going to care. So the question you started this segment out with, is the theater in danger
the movie
going
theater
away?
As we know
I
it.
Think it is, except that we still enjoy, I like seeing a comedy with other people.
Right.
We have to go see something like The
Avatar
Walk,
or,
and we have to see
so
things
we'll see
like that.
Big, funny spectacles.
Yeah, so the spectacle is what, unfortunately, that means Hollywood is going to keep making sequels to action figures and things they know are going to work.
X-Men 9. The Avengers 12,
right?
You know,
audience
Transformers
0.
15.
Transformers 15, audience 0. That's the score
I
there.
I have to add something really quick. One of my reviewer friends was reviewing Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, and he wrote, "This movie is awful. See it opening weekend." Just to observe the way that these fans experience these movies as a community.
Yeah, it's almost like the Rocky
react.
Horror Picture Show. You know?
That is exactly exactly how I would describe it. Like, the reaction to those movies is how people reacted when Psycho came out and Jenna Lee was stabbed, like the gasp and the uproarious response.
So next week, we're going to be joined by a very funny comedian, Sherrard Small, will be joining us, and we're going to be talking about the new movie Steve Jobs. What we all need, another movie about Steve Jobs, but we've got another movie about Steve Jobs, but this one was written by Aaron Sorkin, mm-hmm. who is a brilliant writer, responsible for The West Wing and Sports Night and
Newsroom.
Just the Newsroom, that's true,
Central
and Studio
Network.
60, which nobody saw but me, which I happen to really like.
I love them.
And it was directed by, who directed the Aaron Sorkin movie?
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle, who did 127
and
Hours.
Michael Fassbender is
And Michael
Jobs
Fassbender plays Jobs.
Great. A lot of people were up for that part. A lot of people considered and directors attached to it. And now this is the movie we get.
So we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about a movie called Knock Knock, which is on demand and in theaters, starring Keanu Reeves. We're going to be talking about that next week.
That has quality written all over it. Let's see if I'm delightfully surprised.
I'm so upset that I'm missing this.
Yeah, and a movie I didn't get to today, a Mexican film, A La Mala. Let's talk about that next week.
Oh, just give that a quick plug, though. Just say rent it.
And okay.
Then when you join us next week, you'll have seen it, and we can talk about it.
There you go, A La Mala. It's like a Mexican romantic comedy with a very, very beautiful, breathtaking woman who's
the new Penelope Cruz.
Are her eyebrows up to par? Is the question.
Her eyebrows.
Would she look good in 3D?
That's funny. Her name is, by the way, is Aislinna Derbez.
So, if you're listening, we're sorry we maligned
you.
Yeah,
I mangled your name. Anyway, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And thank you, Justine Browning, for joining us from We've Got This Covered this week. And as always, Bill McCuddy and Bill Bregoli. And join us next week. We're having fun on Sitting Around Talking Movies. Thanks.